anything in it except a vending machine that hands out wrapped candies. They taste like piss, but give you a +1 boost to your dexterity for 10 minutes. The machine only works for you once a day. The next place is further down. It's a Taco Bell from Peru and has full facilities, including coffee.
He leaned in.
And beer. Good beer.
What about the mobs near there? Also, how about training guilds?
We've cleared out the next two quadrants. Some of the other guys killed the first neighborhood boss. They said it was like a giant demon man in a suit made of skin. We got the second boss. All of us here were in on that fight. That one was a floating crystal thing, but it shattered when I hit it with my hammer a few times. The next area after that, next to the Taco Bell, is still crawling with monsters. They're lizard creatures. They jump and bite and poison you. I got hit once, and I thought I was going to die. The poison ran out on its own just before it killed me, and that was only because I kept taking health potions. We didn't want to mess around in that neighborhood after that. But there are a couple training guilds in the area.
Okay. Good. This is what's going to happen. Donut and I are going to spend the rest of today grinding. If you can manage to pry a pair of those rattle cans from Agatha over there, I'll take them with us. I'm going to try to level up my skills as much as possible. You guys should do the same. Be wary of any other crawlers, especially ones with the skulls by their names. We're going to watch episode 3, get some sleep, and then we're going to come back here. And then all of us, me, Donut, and you four, are going to go into there, and we're going to fuck that boss up. We're going to get your people down those stairs. Sound like a plan?
And how are we going to do that?
A new voice asked. It was Imani, speaking for the first time. I grinned. Don't worry. I have an idea. Chapter 23.
So, what's this grand idea of yours?
Donut asked as we walked away. With her new skirt-like crupper combined with the butterfly talisman around her collar, she jingled when we walked.
How are we going to kill that thing?
I have no fucking clue. But we need them to train. It's our only choice. It took us a full day to find this set of stairs, and we are almost out of time. It's better to face the enemy you know than the one you don't.
We don't know this enemy,
Donut said.
Wait, what are you doing?
I'd come to the first of the spray-painted signs pointing toward the encampment. I took the can of red paint they'd given me, and I sprayed completely over it, covering it up. Did you see that Imani's level? I asked, standing to see if I could still read it. She was level 10, and that was partially because she'd been forced to kill all those people.
So, are you saying if someone else comes, they might kill all the old people, just to get experience? Oh, Carl, darling, nobody is quite that evil. Are they?
I don't know, and I don't want to find out either.
But what if a big group of good guys comes through, and they miss it because you covered it up?
Look where we are, Donut. We were lucky to find these people. There aren't any big groups of good guys. Not in these parts. It's only sharks and minnows. Now, come on. Let's find that Taco Bell.
So, which one are we?
Donut asked as we trekked off. I didn't answer. I couldn't. Brandon said they'd put dozens of signs up all over the place. As we headed north, I either defaced or changed all the ones I could find. There was no way I'd get to them all, but it made me feel better. I was busy changing a sign from saying 2 blocks south to 12 blocks south, when Donut lifted her head, sniffing.
2 more rats round the corner.
A moment later, their dots appeared. Your sense of smell is getting better.
No, I think the rats are getting stinkier.
We'd killed at least 30 rats between here and the encampment. These rats were bigger and fatter than the ones we'd fought earlier. They were all level 3. Before we'd left, I'd quietly asked Brandon if they'd loot the corpses of the folks who'd been killed right when they'd entered the dungeon. He'd been horrified at first, until I explained that I needed pants and shoes. He'd given me directions. They'd looted the extra wheelchairs, walkers, and canes, but they hadn't touched their clothes. It would have required them to physically remove them. The thought made me ill. It also gave me a new burst of hatred for Frank Q and Maggie Mai, who had stripped the body of Rebecca W.
They'd probably removed the clothes of the other ones they'd killed, too.
When we got to where the elderly folks had died, all that was left was piles of bones and shredded clothes. Nothing usable. I picked up the gnawed remains of a slipper, tossing it down with disgust. The rats had devoured everything else, tearing through the corpses like a hurricane. And now the rats in the area were bigger. We turned the corner and entered a new quadrant. A pair of humanoid creatures with loincloths and crude club saw us and hopped in our direction, hissing. These were 3-foot-tall lizard monsters, like Brandon had stated, the tallest of them almost as high as my hip. They looked like upright Komodo dragons from the waist up. Small, but muscular. Their legs were long and bent, kangaroo-like and scaly.
Troglodyte pygmy, level 2. Oh, these fuckers. With an intelligence just shy of an oft-dropped toddler, the standard troglodyte pygmy warrior would be harmless if it wasn't so damn fast. Or venomous.
Brandon had warned me about their special attack, so I was ready. Donut hit the first with a magic missile while the second leaped right at me, hissing and baring his giant fangs. I hit it with a right hook, my chain-covered fist smashing its head, changing the creature's trajectory so it splattered against the wall of the tunnel. It exploded like a damn tomato. Donut's target had practically vaporized under her single missile strike. Her magic missile spell had risen to level 5, and she now had the option to choose how many mana points to put into each casting, from 3 to 6. Her intelligence was currently 24, meaning she could fire 8 missiles if she kept the power setting at 3. I poked at the burnt-out husk of troglodyte with my bare toe. It had only been a few days, but I barely felt the ground now when I walked. Random rocks still hurt, but not so much as they would have before. That didn't look like a 3-mana missile.
That was a 6,
Donut said, sniffing at her handiwork.
They really need to make this less disgusting.
If it's a level 2 monster, a 3 will probably one-shot it, I said. Neither dropped any loot, but I took their clubs.
If it's about to bite my face off, it's getting a 6,
said Donut. We spent the next hour hunting down and killing all the troglodytes we could. The level 3s were called troglodyte bashers, and the level 4s were troglodyte virtuosos. The bashers were twice as big, making them almost human-sized. They didn't have any other special abilities, and they had more regular legs. The virtuosos had a tongue attack that surprised me at first. They were the same size as the level 2s, but they could shoot their tongues almost 15 feet. The thin, wet tongue stung like a whip, inflicting poison, which was immediately cancelled thanks to my night-gaunt cloak. Donut and I were starting to become adept at fighting as a team. She'd wait for an opening to fire her missiles, and I'd move in to finish them off with a kick or a punch. I could tell just by her stance when and where she was going to move. She jumped on my shoulder with ease, using my height to fire on her targets from above. She'd hide behind me, easily slipping between my jacket and cloak, hanging on my back with her claws to avoid a poison attack. Well, any attack, really. We didn't level up yet to 9, but we were well on our way. It seemed after level 8, the amount of experience it took to hit the next level was absurdly high. We were plateauing. Even though I couldn't distribute my stat points, my fighting skills were steadily climbing, giving my attacks more and more damage. The difficulty would probably start all over again when we went down a floor. If we went down a floor. After killing a troglodyte basher, all that was left from one of Donut's missile strikes was the lizard's head, rolling about like a lumpy soccer ball. She jumped down and idly batted at it while I caught my breath. With a single swipe, the skull flew across the hallway and shattered into the wall, leaving a crack in the stones.
Whew. You need to practice with your claws, I said, looking at the damage. My strength is 9, and yours is 18. You are literally twice as strong as I am, and I'm pretty damn strong now. You could probably swipe through steel if you just tried.
Fighting with one's claws is just so inelegant. It's not ladylike.
And shooting lasers out of your eyes is?
Oh my, yes. With my magic missile, I don't get blood on me like a common house cat. I don't end up matted and filthy. I can't even imagine it. I'd end up looking like Ferdinand.
Who the hell is Ferdinand?
Nobody you'd know.
Just think about it, okay?
She didn't answer. We found the troglodyte boss room after a couple hours of grinding through the hallways. This one was a little differently shaped than the others. The room was a long rectangle with what appeared to be a smaller room at the entrance, meaning I wouldn't be able to pull off my bomb from afar method of boss killing. The highest mob in this area was a level 4, meaning, hopefully, the boss wouldn't be too strong. Probably a level 7 or 8. It was dangerous, but if we couldn't handle a floor 1 neighborhood boss by now, we'd have no chance against whatever was guarding those stairs. We decided to go for it. We hesitantly approached the boss room. The front door to this one was one of those glass automatic sliding doors, though I couldn't see inside. The sign on the door was in English. It said, "Open 24 hours," and "Fitness, weights, gains." I grabbed a cigarette and lit it. It was my second to last one. I took a deep drag. We stepped inside. Chapter 24. Like the door indicated, this was a high-ceilinged gym. Where we entered was a small receptionist's desk with a turnstile. Signs hung on the wall filled with slogans like, "Today is the day you gain," and "Excuses, don't lose calories," and "Release the beast." The place smelled of sweat and oil and testosterone. From around the corner, I could see racks of fitness equipment. While not tiny, the place was much smaller than the last boss room. I didn't dare throw a dynamite stick in here. A loud, deep grunting filled the gym, followed by the familiar ching of metal weights crashing together. A level 2 troglodyte hissed at us from the counter, and Donut jumped to my shoulder and slammed him with a missile. He fell over, dead.
Hey, was that a 3-power? He didn't explode.
Yes, it was. I'm conserving my mana.
The automatic door slammed shut behind us, and the well-lit room turned red. The familiar music started to play as I pushed my way through the turnstile. The boss battle message blared, almost identical to last time. Our mugshots floated into the air, and we were announced as we rounded the corner. 6 of the level 3 troglodyte bashers filled the room, working the machines. A trio of the virtuosos stood in the opposite corner. And then there was the boss. The monstrosity stood across the room, admiring himself in the mirror as he curled a pair of absurdly large dumbbells. The creature stopped when we entered the room. He dropped the weights. The pair embedded themselves halfway into the floor with a reverberating crash. Wood splintered up all around where they fell. The beast slowly turned in our direction, and the world paused the moment his eyes met mine. Ah, fuck, I thought, as the face of the creature zoomed big on my interface.
Versus the Juicer, level 9 neighborhood boss, with a body enhanced by the finest anabolic steroids the dark web has to offer. The Juicer spends his days pushing iron, snapping necks, and crying that his pimple-infested sack is a third the size it once was. Having reached a plateau, rage now fills his enlarged heart. All he ever wanted was to gain, but right now he'll settle on bringing out...
The music hit a crescendo with a dun-dun-dun.
The pain.
The cheese factor on some of these descriptions is just horrifying,
Donut muttered.
It's worse than that Knight Rider show you love so much.
Once again, this creature was a person from our world, though without the description it wouldn't be quite as obvious. It was like they'd taken a troglodyte basher and merged it with a contestant from a bodybuilding contest, and then inflated his muscles well past what a normal body could sustain. He was a couple of inches taller than me. He still had the lizard head and a scaled body and tail. He wore little black shorts and nothing else, revealing a preposterously muscled physique, covered in tributaries of bulging veins as thick as my finger. The thing was so shredded, he was like a kid in a snowsuit who couldn't put his arms down. His trap muscles made him look as if he had tumors sprouting from the edge of his shoulder to halfway up his scaled head.
His thighs were the size of beer kegs, forcing him into a ridiculous, wide stance. He waddled when he moved.
Bro!
The monstrosity croaked.
I need a spot, bro!
He pulled a round, metallic free weight from a rack. The disc was the size of a manhole cover. With a twist of his waist, he threw it right at my head. The giant weight burst into flames as it rocketed toward me.
Holy fuck!
I cried as I jumped out of the way. Donut leaped in the other direction. The weight crashed into a treadmill and exploded, shattering the mirror behind it. I activated my scroll of confusing fog as the other troglodytes descended on me. The effect was immediate. A thick, wet fog filled the room, temporarily blinding me before it faded before my eyes. Water beaded over everything, making the ground slick. I could still see the outline of the cloud in the room, but the opacity of the effect was halved. I knew the troglodytes couldn't see a thing. The scroll didn't say how long the effect lasted, but I suspected it wasn't long. We had to act fast. The troglodytes, blinded, started running into each other and the scattered gym equipment. The juicer picked up another weight and chucked it in a random direction.
Bro!
He groaned.
Bro, I can't see!
I rushed toward the group of bashers as yet another weight crashed against the squat rack, knocking it on its side with a mighty clang. We'd decided ahead of time that I'd take out the support creatures first if I could, while Donut dealt full-strength headshots to the boss. I leaped over a glute machine, punching down into the wide-eyed, confused face of a basher. These guys took at least 4 or 5 punches to stay down. My fist burned as I tore through them. I swept the leg out of the final basher, and he tumbled, hitting his head on the padded chair of a chest press. As I caved in the side of his head with my fist, the fog cleared, just as quickly as it had come. Damn it. I read my second scroll as I scrambled away from a flaming disc. It smashed into the same chest press, sending flaming hunks of metal in every direction like shrapnel. I cried out as my exposed hip exploded in pain. Blood geysered down my leg. I cast my heal spell just as the fog refilled the chamber. The confusing fog had lasted barely 15 or 20 seconds, and I only had one scroll left. Donut bounced back and forth around the room, launching at the juicer, who was content to stay where he was and hurl metal at us. The powerful magic missiles were having an obvious effect on the boss monster, but his health bar was still in the green by the time Donut had to drink a mana potion. The juicer grunted every time the missiles hit his head, followed by a bellow of rage. He'd pick up another weight and toss it in Donut's general direction. She was smart enough to move after each blast. The weights flew through the mist like comets. In addition to avoiding the attacks by the boss, Donut had to dodge the random tongue lashes from the virtuosos. She tried to keep a machine between herself and the poison-dealing monsters. Only I had the anti-poison resistance, and if she got hit, we'd have a hard time keeping her alive until she'd be allowed to drink an antidote potion. Both my leg and my hand healed as I launched myself toward the other side of the room at the three virtuosos. One blindly shot his tongue, and it smashed into a chin-up bar machine next to me. I grasped the tongue with my left hand before it could recede, and the lizard made a strangled cry as it tried to retract, but found he couldn't. He retracted anyway, getting dragged across the room toward me. His large mouth clamped down on my fist. I cried out in pain. I banged the head against the side of a machine, but the body remained firmly attached. Its dozens of sharp teeth were embedded in the bones of my arm. The virtuoso wasn't dead, but he was literally choking on my fist. He seemed just as desperate to get free of me as I was. His body weighed barely anything, and it flayed desperately as it dangled off my arm. I reached the other two lizards just as the fog began to clear again.
I'm almost out!
Donut cried behind me. I snap-kicked one in the stomach, and he doubled over. I smashed down with my foot, breaking his neck as I whirled on the third, hitting him with a right cross. I took my left fist, which was still inside the mouth of the first troglodyte, and I pummeled the third to death. The lizard affixed to me also died during the beating, and his body broke off the neck with a disgusting snap. The teeth remained painfully attached to my left wrist, like I was wearing a bizarre boxing glove made of troglodyte head. Bits of gore and bone still hung from the neck hole. I whirled to face the boss. The juicer's health was about 2/3 gone. The entire top half of his body was blackened and scorched.
I could no longer see his beady eyes glaring at me.
Bro!
He said.
Not cool! That was my bro!
He picked up another weight and flung it at me. I dove out of the way. It hit the wall, shattering. Shrapnel cut into me. Burning little pieces of metal peppered the side of my head. I fell backward over another machine, my ankle getting caught in the wire. I read my final scroll of confusing fog as I extracted myself. Another weight rocketed toward me, whirring over my head like a buzzsaw. It exploded behind me. More metal chunks cut into me. My health plummeted into the red. I mentally clicked a health potion from my hot list as I peeled the skull off my wrist. It was like trying to free a boiled egg from its shell. I had to break the head from the jaw to free my hand. The skull clattered to the ground. After I drank the potion, I noted I had a 15-second cooldown before I could drink another. Donut's cooldown was much longer, closer to 2 minutes. I didn't have time to wonder why we were different. The fog filled the room, and I rushed at the boss. This is a terrible idea, I thought, as I approached from behind. The monster was bent over, feeling blindly for another weight from the rack. He'd pulled all the weights off of one pole, but there were more right below it. Blinded, he couldn't see what to grab. I grasped at a barbell that appeared to have about 250 pounds on each side. I grasped the stop and ripped half the weights free, which clattered to the ground near my feet. I held onto the barbell before it could tumble forward off the bench. I brandished the lopsided makeshift weapon like a giant mace. Before, lifting 250 pounds plus the bar would be next to impossible. I normally benched 230 pounds, which was a respectable amount. With my strength now at 9, I could still feel the weight, but I lifted it easily. It was enough to be awkward and maybe too much to just regularly walk around with, but I knew I could easily swing it, and I did, as hard as I could, at the monster's scaly head. Crash! My whole body shuddered, as if I'd swung at a solid wall. The boss staggered, falling on his side, dropping the weight he'd managed to pull free. The bar trembled, and the three weights fell off the far end. I smacked him one more time with the much lighter bar, then tossed it. I picked up one of the 100-pound weights at my feet, lifted it over my head in both hands, and smashed down on the juicer. I smashed, and I smashed. His health bar slowly descended as he cried out.
Stop! Ow! No! Bro! It hurts!
Just when I thought he was done, about to die, he twisted. His giant arm shot up, fast as a snake strike, and it grasped my wrist. It felt as if a steel shackle had wrapped around me. Oh, fuck, I thought, as I dropped the bloody, dripping weight, which bounced off the monstrosity's stomach. He took his other hand and grasped my neck.
This is gonna hella burn,
he said, sitting up. The fog cleared, and his eyes focused on me. Despite being lizard-faced, a row of pustules circled his eyes, like zits that had grown up through the scales. He stank of sweat and burned flesh and axe body spray. He started to squeeze, and I knew I was dead. My health bar plummeted. A magic missile slammed into the juicer's back. This was a weak one, and the monster barely acknowledged it with a grunt.
Hold on, Carl!
Donut cried. She emerged, flying through the air, claws out like a tiger pouncing on unsuspecting prey. She landed directly on the monster's massive, bulbous shoulder, and she bit down hard on his vein-covered neck as her rear legs scrabbled at his back. Tendrils of green and red tissue went flying, as if she were a potato peeler gone haywire. She bit through one of the veins on his neck, vampire-like. Blood sprayed as if she had struck oil, soaking Donut, who gurgled in response. The giant hand at my neck went slack, and he slapped backward at Donut. He barely hit her, a glancing blow, but she rocketed off the creature's back as if she'd been shot out of a cannon. She hit the far wall with a sickening crunch.
Donut!
I cried. I scrambled to my feet, wheezing for breath as the monster reached for his shredded back in obvious agonizing pain. Blood sprayed from his neck as if she'd sheared off a water spigot. The blood just kept coming and coming, an impossible amount. The juicer looked at me, eyes surprised as if he hadn't realized I was still alive.
I'm proud of you, bro,
he said.
You fought through the pain.
I hit him with a weak jab.
and that's all it took. The boss, whose health was already all but depleted, crumpled onto his back. I smashed his solid head with my foot. The system seemed to release whatever supernatural protection it gave to bones and flesh once the creature was dead, and his head caved in easily under my heel. It felt as if I'd stepped into a rotten watermelon. I didn't pause to look at the carnage. I rushed across the room toward Donut. She lay in a bloodied heap on the floor, her leg bent in the wrong direction. Her health bar held nothing but the barest sliver of red.
"Donut!"
I cried, coming to my knees before her.
"God damn it, Donut! Don't you do this to me!"
She gasped, not dead. The cat was entirely soaked in blood, but she was alive. I worriedly watched her health, terrified it might go lower. Sometimes when you were injured, it continued to decrease, just like on the surface. The winner graphic appeared on my screen, and the music stopped as I plunged into my inventory. I had to wait 10 frustrating seconds for the bullshit to clear before I could find what I was searching for. I had a scroll of Heal Critter. I read it, but it didn't work on her. The scroll evaporated from my menu with an error message.
"No valid target available. You just wasted a valuable scroll, dumbass."
I couldn't cast my heal spell on her, even if I did have enough mana points, which I didn't. Instead, I pulled a healing potion out of my inventory and uncorked it, ready to pour it into her mouth. I paused. She'd taken a mana potion just a few minutes earlier. She had a much longer potion countdown than I did. It probably had something to do with our constitution levels. I couldn't examine her and tell where that countdown was, if it had run out or not. Would it hurt her if I tried to feed the potion to her early? I didn't know. Any damage now would surely kill her. I quickly pulled a second healing potion and decided to test it on myself. Using the quick slots, it wouldn't allow me to take a second potion, but surely the game couldn't stop me from doing it manually. I downed one health potion, which brought my health back up. This was my first time actually physically drinking one. It tasted oddly like kiwi juice. The bottle disappeared with a poof. The 15-second timer appeared, and I drank the second potion before the timer was done.
"You have been poisoned! Poison effect nullified!"
"God damn it!"
I growled. I leaned over Donut, rubbing her soft fur.
"Stay with me,"
I said.
Crack!
The cat murmured in pain as her broken leg magically set itself. The sliver of health grew longer. She was healing. Getting better. I sighed, relief washing over me. She would heal on her own, but it was going to take a while. I'd wait another 5 minutes before I risked giving her the potion, which would ease her pain.
"Carl. Carl, is that you?"
Donut asked after a minute, lifting her head pitifully.
"Did we get it?"
"We got it, Donut. You got it. Don't move. Just rest for a minute. You saved my life."
"I have been grievously injured in battle. In saving you, I have made the ultimate sacrifice. I can feel my life fading away, Carl. I'm circling that last bend into the drain. This is the end. I used my claws, like you said, and I have perished as a result. Miss Beatrice is going to be most displeased with you."
She coughed twice. Two coughs that sounded suspiciously fake.
"Tell her I fought bravely. Tell her I fought to the end. Find Ferdinand. Tell him I loved him. I loved him ever since I first saw him."
Her health suddenly rocketed back up on its own. She'd taken one of her own health potions. I sighed, relieved.
"The light. I think I see the light,"
she croaked as I sat back and crossed my arms. Her eyes were clenched shut in mock pain.
"This mortal coil is shed."
"Oh, get up," I said, looking about the room. "Help me loot all this crap." Chapter 25. After snagging the neighborhood map, I spent some time grabbing all the weight equipment I could carry. There was a lot of it. Free weights and dumbbells littered the room. I took them all. I grabbed multiple weight benches, which weighed nothing once I removed the bars,
I broke down a door I hadn't noticed earlier, and within were several mats and heavy medicine balls and various pieces of broken gym equipment, along with some wrenches and other tools. All into the inventory, including the broken door. I then took everything off the office counter on the receptionist's desk, including a laptop computer with a dead battery and a cabinet filled with paper files.
"Why are you even bothering?"
Donut asked, having fully recovered. She frantically attempted to clean the blood off of herself. She was caked. She needed a shower and a brushing. The brushing part was going to be a problem. "If we can lift it, then we can take it. It only takes a second. The system is really good about categorizing it all. For some things, like that cabinet, it's faster to pick the whole thing up and add everything into the inventory than it is to search it. For example, I held out my hand, and a half-full bottle of Johnny Walker Black appeared. This was hidden in that cabinet somewhere. The inventory system lets me keep it all together, and it lets me take things out of it, too. It's great once you figure out how to work it. We don't know what will be useful and when, so if it's not bolted to the ground, it's going into the bag." Our next stop was a nearby training guild. Thanks to the boss being a higher level than expected, we both hit level 9. The wide expanse of experience needed to hit level 10 spread before us. We also both had piles of loot boxes to open.
"3 stars, I see,"
Mordecai said as we entered the training guild. He paused, his eyes going glossy for a moment.
"You took out a level 9 boss on your own? Most impressive."
"Yeah, it was a dumb idea. Not knowing what we're going to face really sucks. It's hard to prepare for fights when you're going in blind." I sat heavily in the chair while Donut leaped for the fireplace and paused her manic cleaning to open her boxes. The rat creature nodded.
"Let me examine the fight notes, and I can tell you what you can improve on."
He grunted after a moment.
Okay, a couple things are clear. First off, brilliant move killing the goblin boss. Those guys are tough, but they aren't as hard as that thing you just fought. That's a new one to me."
He shook his head.
"The juicer?"
"I think it was somebody from our world mixed up with one of those troglodytes. He wasn't as lucid as the hoarder lady had been. They'd done something to him to make him say all that dumb shit. The bosses are caricatures, exaggerated stereotypes. It's like they're being controlled by an AI, but their consciousness is still rattling around in there, too. It's really bizarre." Mordecai nodded.
"It's what they do. Right now, across the universe, every eye is focused on Earth. Programs about your culture are reaching all the corners of the galaxy. The bosses are a part of that. It's like this every season. Anyway, let's look at your performance. When you hit it with that heavy weight, you did the same amount of damage as you would have with your fist. You need to understand how powerful your bare-knuckle skill has become. It's just as good right now as any unenchanted weapon you may find. I understand it's not convenient sometimes, but I recommend sticking with the bare hand attack. Also, you wasted those confusing fog scrolls. Next time, have the party member with the highest intelligence read any scrolls if you can. Your intelligence of 3 made it so the fog only lasted 15 seconds. Princess Donut's intelligence level would have resulted in the fog lasting for 120 seconds per scroll."
"Damn. Also, is that why she can't take potions so often? Because her constitution is low?"
"Yes. That shred attack of hers is very powerful, but it's useless until she gains more armor and more health. You're lucky she hadn't broken her neck. Picking a class or a race with a high base constitution will help, but not much. She'll need to load up on items that enhance it, and those tend to be less common."
I looked at Donut, who was hissing with rage at the piles of torches that kept appearing in front of her. She'd received yet another spellbook in the bronze boss box, but she hadn't read it yet. Most everything else appeared to be the same old crap with a couple exceptions. She got a bracelet from a silver adventurer box she'd received for finally dealing melee damage. The bracelet added +2 to her dexterity stat, bringing it to 12. She equipped it, and it wrapped snugly around her front leg. She also received a dozen heal scrolls from a silver survivor's box. That one was rewarded to her because she'd ended a boss battle with less than 5% of her health. The scrolls were good to have because there was no countdown between reading each one, and even better yet, we could use the scrolls on each other. She looked up at us.
I am already one of God's most perfect creatures, so I won't be changing race when the opportunity arises. I was born a cat, and I will die a cat. In fact, I'm going to have to insist that Carl choose a cat race as well.
I'm not going to change into a cat. In fact, I've been thinking about it, and I decided I'm going to stick with human. Donuts did her approximation of a shrug and glowed as she read the magical tome.
Did you at least read the description first? What was it?
Mordecai nodded.
That's a good one. Puddle Jumper.
What does it do?
She can teleport herself and up to 3 others to somewhere else that is within her line of sight. It will be especially useful if you come across rivers of lava or other impassable locations. Higher levels of the spell allow her to go further. If she manages to hit level 15 with the spell, it works almost as well as teleport, one of the most powerful, most important spells to have in this dungeon. It costs 20 mana to cast and has a 10-second delay and a 5-hour cooldown. It's not good as a combat spell with that long of a delay, but it's still great to have.
What we really need is the ability to heal each other better.
Yes. Yes, you do. There are a lot of methods out there. Those 12 heal scrolls are good, and I suspect you're about to get a few more. But for now, I would avoid letting Donut use her melee attacks unless it's absolutely necessary. Her strength stat is phenomenal for this floor, but it'll start to catch up to her later. She was at strength 18 during that fight. By way of comparison, the juicer had a strength of 25. She's in the wrong body to properly utilize that stat for hand-to-hand combat. Plus, her health is simply too low. For now.
He nodded at the cat, who had resumed her hopeless self-grooming.
And you, little one. Your dodge skill is level 4. Keep working on it. Once it hits 5, it'll be much easier for you.
Look, the real reason we're here is because we've only found one set of stairs down. But there's a problem. Mordecai's eyes widened as I told him about the others and the burrow boss.
The solution is simple. Skip the boss and keep searching for another set of stairs. They're out there, and most aren't guarded.
We drove for a day straight before we found this one. I'm really worried this is our only chance. Do you know what type of monster that is? Do you have any tips?
If I did know what it was, I wouldn't be allowed to tell you. I have a very specific, rigorous set of rules I must follow, especially when it comes to bosses. Come back here after the fight, and I'll happily sit down with you and analyze the battle and tell you all the boss's stats. But if I tell you about the boss ahead of time, it's considered cheating. You don't want to be caught cheating. I can tell you that it's madness to face a burrow boss with only 6 crawlers.
I sighed. All of this talk about future levels and choosing a race and class was a waste of time. None of that was going to matter if we didn't manage to make it past the first damn floor.
Is there anything you can tell me?
Mordecai thought for a moment.
Tell me, what does that juicer boss have in common with that bad llama mob you fought earlier?
I shrugged. They're both drug addicts?
No, not that. How did you kill the llama?
I throat punched him, and it made his head melt off. Mordecai nodded.
And the juicer? What attack, do you suppose, took him down?
It was a combination of several things, but probably when Donut bit his neck and tapped directly into his bloodstream. I laughed as Donut glowered at me. She still looked as if she'd tried to reenact the final scene from Carrie.
That's exactly right. Most of these creatures have a weakness. The throat for the llamas, the high-pressure vein for the boss. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. The hoarder, for example. I can now tell you her weakness was the bugs coming out of her mouth. If you'd killed one before it had fully emerged, the next cockroach in line wouldn't be able to get out. It would have choked and killed her.
Huh. I never really thought of it that way.
Look for a vulnerability, and once you find it, exploit it. You haven't yet walked into a boss battle completely blind, like you say. There have been clues every time. There will always be clues. Look for them.
There will always be clues. What did we know about this burrow boss? I thought about that as I sat down and examined my new achievements and boxes. In addition to the boss box, it was mostly the standard stuff. My bare knuckle and other fighting skills all ticked up to 6, including my smush skill. my iron punch rose to 5. I received random achievements for riding the chopper for more than 5 hours, another for having killed more than 100 wandering monsters in the maze. I'd received a bronze survivor's box for having less than 10% health when the boss died. I received 5 more of the heal scrolls for that one, leaving us with 17 of them. Most of the other prizes were the standard bronze or silver adventurer boxes. Potions, bandages, biscuits. I did receive a random cowboy hat, which I tossed into my inventory. I also was awarded an interesting achievement.
New achievement! 2 chicks at the same time. You killed 2 mobs at once using only their own bodies against each other. On a brutality scale of Bambi to Martyrs, that is a solid 7. Reward? You've received a gold brawler box.
I also received another gold looter box for storing more than 10 tons worth of crap in my storage. The boss box contained a pile of ninja stars.
Enchanted Shuriken of Bloodlust, x100. Small, low-damage throwing stars. These bad boys aren't anything special upon first glance. They're the same black stars you wannabe ninjas purchased at the knife shop and the swap meet when you were kids. The same throwing stars you drill into the drywall of your room until your mom caught you and took them away. And while these shuriken don't have the ability to turn you into a ninja, nor do they have the capacity to make your mom stop drinking, they are enchanted with a bloodlust enchantment. For every monster you damage with a shuriken from this set, the damage against that monster type rises by 8%.
I looked at Mordecai. When it says the damage increases by 8%, does it mean 8% from the original amount or 8% compounded? That's a big deal after a while.
Huh. I don't know. Hang on.
His eyes went glossy as he presumably entered some sort of tutorial guide-only help menu.
Yeah, good news. It's compounded,
he said after a minute.
So each hit will be 8% higher than the previous amount. The bad news is, the stars are very fragile.
That sounded pretty awesome at first, but I suspected it wasn't that great of an enchantment. It'd take a long time to power them up. I'd have to do a ton of throwing to make them worthwhile. I only had 100 of them. I'd have to collect them back each time, and if they broke a lot, then I might only get one chance to really use them. The gold looter box contained yet another skill potion. It was once again a determined value skill tonic. I drank it, leveling the skill up to 2. I couldn't see a difference in the menu. I suspected I'd need 3 more before it became really useful. The brawler box contained the best item of the lot. After my shirt and cloak, it was easily the greatest loot I'd won so far in the dungeon. It was exactly the type of weapon I'd been hoping for.
Enchanted War Gauntlet of the Exalted Grull. Right-handed. +3 strength, in fist mode only. +1 dexterity. +2 skill levels to Iron Punch. +1 skill level to Powerful Strike. 2% chance to stun enemy upon a successful hit. Item is a wrist bracer that transforms into a spiked war gauntlet made of orcish steel when the hand is shaped into a fist or wields a hilted weapon for more than 2 seconds at a time. This item on its own does not negate the bare-knuckle skill bonus. Warning! If you use this weapon to strike adherents of the war god Grull, you have a 1.5% chance to transfigure your target into the deity himself! Trust me on this. You don't want to do that. A bigger, redder warning. Remove this item before you jerk off.
Hey, Mordecai, I said as I removed the chain and slipped the charcoal-colored bracer over my wrist. How can I tell if someone worships Grull? He grunted.
Equine class creatures worship him. So if it's a horse or a centaur or a tick belong, then he might worship Grull. Creatures like that bad llama might also pray to him, but not until after the 3rd floor. The biggest tell is that they smear blue makeup all over themselves and won't stop talking about wenches and dying gloriously in battle.
Mordecai paused. He looked up nervously, as if not sure he should say this next part.
And just so you know, Grull isn't a real god. There are no real gods in this game.
Does that really make a difference? Mordecai was suddenly solemn, and I didn't know why. He looked at me, intense.
You said that you worry that some of these bosses and mobs are like you, here against their will.
He pointed downward, indicating the lower levels.
That's not always going to be the case, especially later on. Remember that. There are no gods here. Just those who pay for the privilege.
Okay, I said, trying to make sense of what he was desperately attempting to tell me.
What the goodness is a tick-belong?
Donut asked, pausing in her cleaning.
It sounds like some sort of disease a sailor would get.
Do you know what a horse is?
Mordecai asked, looking up. He seemed relieved for the question.
Of course.
They're like that. But meaner.
I closed my fist. 2 seconds ticked by. I felt a haptic buzz all up my arm, and with a whoosh, my hand turned into a spiked hunk of metal. I had to clench my fist really tight to make it work, which was good. The last thing I needed was this thing appearing when I didn't want it to. I examined the malevolent-looking gauntlet. There was nothing ornate about it. It was black, angular, with multiple gleaming spikes. A tool, nothing more. It felt heavy on my hand, but not too heavy. No more breaking fingers when I punched something. I felt the extra strength ripple through me. I released my fist, and the gauntlet vanished in a puff of smoke that smelled of burned hair.
Awesome, I said.
Chapter 26. Time to level collapse. 6 hours, 30 minutes. Are you ready? I asked Brandon as we poised at the entrance to the Burrow Boss chamber.
No,
he said, smiling sadly. He clutched onto his massive warhammer for a moment. It disappeared into his inventory. The giant weapon could only get in the way during the first part of the plan. Donut perched on my shoulder while the others crowded behind us. We didn't have time left for any more training. Any more preparation. It was now or never. The third episode of Dungeon Crawler World hadn't offered any additional insight. Donut and I had sat in the Taco Bell watching it on the screen while the proprietor, another Bobka protector named Sebastian, sat next to us and brushed Donut's hair with one of his own brushes, which he'd gifted to her after her third shower. Her insane charisma of 41 caused the level 21 NPC to practically fall in love with her the moment we entered the safe zone. I sipped on a delicious Peruvian beer and picked at my T-bone steak as we watched crawlers by the dozen get slaughtered while the host breathlessly described the action. The second half of the program had zeroed in on 5 different groups of adventurers, including that woman with the magical crossbow and Lucia Marr with her 2 Rottweilers. The other 3 groups were larger, including one that comprised of 150 African soldiers armed with AK-47s. All of these groups, if the show was to be believed, were just moonwalking their way through the dungeon. All of them had found stairwells down already and were camping near them, waiting for the clock to tick to exactly 6 hours before they descended. Much to Donut's dismay, we were once again snubbed by the program. I didn't care. I was much more occupied with that number. I couldn't get it out of my head. 2,552,085. From 3 million to this in just under 4 days. A cataclysm. Every single one of those numbers was a person. Someone who had lived, breathed, hoped, laughed. And they were just gone. The announcement hadn't offered any additional insight either. Another more stern warning about using the hallways as a bathroom. A litany of changes regarding spells and power levels of mobs, none of which affected us. After sleeping for a few hours, we headed back to the encampment, and I related my dubious, off-the-cuff plan to the group of crawlers who had all appeared shocked that we'd actually returned.
Here we go, I said now, stepping across the drawbridge and through the giant archway.
Brandon, Chris, Yolanda, and Imani followed. We hesitantly entered the round courtyard to the spiral maze.
No, Agatha, don't!
I heard a voice behind me. It was Yolanda, yelling at the woman with the shopping cart, who'd wheeled up behind us.
The woman didn't listen to Yolanda and pushed her way into the entrance hall, cackling with delight.
You're not doing this without old Agatha!
We don't have room for you, Agatha!
Yolanda yelled.
Get back, crazy bat!
Brandon said.
You're gonna get us all killed!
I think that roly-poly is the one that's gonna get us all killed,
Agatha said.
Shut up! Everybody shut up!
Imani said, raising her hand.
Listen for the monster!
Don't worry, I said. It's going to announce itself at any moment. The gate behind us slammed shut as music rose. Metal bars magically appeared, locking us in. This was different music than usual. Faster, more frenetic. An EDM beat mixed by a DJ hopped up on Adderall. A deep bass reverberated the ground. The lights flickered, then went dark. A moment later, they came back on, filling the area with the purple hue of a blacklight. Neon lights appeared on the ceiling. Lasers ripped across the hallways, flashing in beat with the music. We'd stepped into a rave. The sound of rocks scraping filled the room, louder than the song. I turned in a circle, trying to find the source. It was the walls of the courtyard, I realized. They were sinking into the ground, leaving us exposed.
Boss battle!
The voice was distorted, even louder than last time.
You have discovered the lair of a burrow boss. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the main event. Are you ready? Can you feel it coming? I said, are you ready? I want you to put your hands together. And here we go!
I grimaced as I waited for the walls of the round courtyard to finish sinking into the earth. I turned to Brandon.
Get ready!
I had to shout the words. The man nodded. Sweat beaded on his forehead. Behind, the three others spread out. Chris and Short Yolanda both looked absolutely terrified. Imani clutched her sword in two hands, looking grim. Agatha stood there, seemingly oblivious, scratching a hair between her two bulbous eyes. Our seven mugshots appeared floating in the air, one by one. I noted we were in three groups, the Royal Court of Princess Donut, Meadowlark, and Agatha was just Crawler Agatha. The giant Versus slammed into place. The metallic word was in a silver font instead of a bronze one this time. The words burst into flames, and even though this was supposedly virtual text, I felt a blast of heat. And that's when we saw it. With the wall fully retracted, a hallway spread before us, like we were standing on the landing before a tunnel in a subway, but without the drop. The round tunnel was about as wide as a single-lane freeway, about 15 feet tall. The creature roared by right in front of us, startlingly fast, moving from right to left. It was massive, made of flesh, rolling like a pinball. It stank of sewage and rotten meat. It grunted and squealed, a high-pitched, angry pig noise. The flesh was pink, rippling, covered in eyes and random hairs and tusks. But there was something else there, too. Random flaps of black and white cloth were embedded in the flesh, mixed in with swaths of red sequined fabric.
What in the holy hell is that?
Brandon shouted.
It looks like there are...
The world froze.
The Ball of Swine! Level 15 Burrow Boss, also known as the Pork Chop Express. The Ball of Swine is one of the rarest, most deadly battle formations of the Tuskling. Encompassing at least 30 Tuskling knights and their lady loves, a ball formation requires a specific set of circumstances to create. Combine a gathering of Tuskling aristocracy, add an alcohol-fueled, sexually charged orgy of war lust, and sometimes, just sometimes, the wild, ancient battle magic that permeates their war-torn world casts the spell, forming the ball. The Tusklings, the ruling class of the Orcish supremacy, shape into an inseparable sphere that rolls onto the countryside. The Ball of Pork won't stop its night of terror until it has crushed the poor, the weak, and the lesser citizens under its unstoppable weight. Plucked directly from a tuskling high caucus moments after it formed, this particular ball has been transferred here to this dungeon for your entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. The magic of the ball won't allow them to stop until every last drop of crawler blood is squeezed right out of their human bodies.
The world unfroze, and the ball continued its trajectory, rolling away down the path. Ahead of me, more walls moved and shifted, grinding loudly. The walls and entranceways were creating new paths, guiding the massive ball in our direction.
Wow,
Donut said from my shoulder.
I'm feeling really ignored right now. Why is it always human this, human that? Why can't it be blood squeezed out of their human and feline bodies?
Looking to my left and right, I could see what was about to happen. With the lowering of the walls, a new path opened up, and we were on it. The heavy, pounding music was deliberate. We could no longer feel the oncoming train of the giant pig ball. At its current speed, it would circle around onto us in a minute. Maybe less.
Move!
I cried.
Where?
Brandon called.
Away from here!
I said. I pulled the first of several spike strips from my inventory and dropped it on the ground before rushing forward. We moved toward the long, wide path the ball had just rocketed over. A moment later, the ball rushed past again, right where we'd been standing, missing Agatha and her shopping cart by inches. The woman cackled with joy as the squealing wind blew up the flaps on her hat. In the brief moment it passed by, I caught sight of a tuskling face jutting from the center side of the ball, spinning like an ornamental car rim. The orc creature was large and meaty from what I could tell. It held a tusked, wild boar of a face that was twice as wide as a person's. The face had four tusks, two long, curved tusks and a second pair further back, crossed in front of its ugly face. This one was female, I guessed. Purple eyeshadow ran from the top of its bulbous black stare. Her crossed tusks were pierced in multiple places. She also appeared to have a giant purple flower on her head, but the flower was pressed into the pink flesh of the ball, completely flattened. Her mouth was open in a constant, angry squeal. Above the monstrosity appeared a health bar. It was fully green, but the spike strip had damaged it for at least a single point. That was good. A wall rose into the air, blocking us from going back the direction we'd just come. Our plan hadn't anticipated that the walls were going to change. Looking at the ground, I could see a groove had formed onto the stone, multiple concentric circles leading toward the center of the small arena. Some of the grooves led directly into walls. Amongst the grooves, dozens of long, straight lines crisscrossed the ground at right angles. This was where the walls would go up and down. We needed to find a flat area wide enough for our redoubt. The deeper we went, the closer to the stairs, the more quickly the pig ball would circle around.
Look for solid hunks of ground, big ones with no grooves,
I called as I threw a second spike strip onto the ground.
And go!
An entranceway to the next ring appeared about 10 feet behind us.
Move!
I cried. We rushed for the small gate, Agatha going in first. A hunk of stone started rising from the ground as I rushed through, stumbling.
There!
Imani called, pointing to a large square on the ground through a second doorway, yet another circle deeper. It was like a gap in the path, designed to encompass two circles at once.
Go!
I cried, rushing forward and dropping a third and a fourth strip. Despite the heavy base, I felt the ball hurtle past on the other side of the wall. High-pitched squealing rocketed away like the whine of a race car. It's getting faster. We rushed to the center of the square. This chunk of the floor was like a railroad switch, a place where the ball could change paths. The space was about 15 feet by 15 feet with no crevices. Perfect.
It's coming from this way,
I said, pointing right.
I think it needs two loops to get here. Let's do this, just like we practiced. Go!
I pointed at Agatha.
You, sit your ass down on the ground in the middle and don't move.
I ain't leaving my... Hey!
Agatha cried as I grasped the heavy cart from both sides and lifted it into the air, wasting a few precious seconds to put it into my inventory.
Thief! Thief!
Agatha, he'll give it back! Sit down!
Yolanda cried as she started pulling her V-shaped braces from her inventory. I ignored the screaming, crazy woman as I pulled the heavy goblin table from my own inventory and placed it on its side. All around me, the others went to work. We'd been practicing this for hours.
We'd gotten it down to less than 20 seconds for the main structure and another 20 to put it all together. Hopefully, that was enough time. It had taken us almost 5 hours to build the pieces of the redoubt, or as Brandon called it, the speed bump. Brandon and his brother weren't nurses at the facility. They were the maintenance guys, and these dudes knew what they were doing. They didn't normally work after hours, but they'd been there that night, pushing overtime, trying to fix an oven that was on the fritz before the morning staff showed up to make breakfast. I had described my idea. I spread out a bunch of the looted goblin tools for them, explained exactly what I wanted to do, and we went straight to work. We created a portable, modular fortress, consisting of tables, weight equipment, and loads of other odds and ends. The angled 4-foot-high structure looked like a lopsided tortoise shell when it was completed. We didn't have any sort of welding equipment, but the goblins had hand-cranked drills and large, toothed bolts designed to screw into the holes the drills created. They also had these small, half-moon saws that cut through steel with alarming ease. We removed the legs from the workshop tables, then bolted new ones on, utilizing the load-bearing legs from the weight equipment. The tables were designed to sit solidly at a low angle when we put them on their side. After, we bolted weight benches onto the sides of the tables, like attaching shutters to the edges of a doorframe. Both Brandon and Imani had received items that gave them boosts to their strength, and they each had 2 sections of wall to place. The pieces were large and unwieldy, and heavy as shit. But when placed down in the correct order, Imani, then Brandon, then Imani, then me with the largest piece, and then finally Brandon, the multiple pieces slid together, bolts moving into precisely placed holes. Brandon and I moved to the roof, made of the crossbars of weight racks, while Chris and Imani twisted massive, fist-sized butterfly bolts, affixing the pieces together. Yolanda pulled the rest of the angled braces out of her inventory, sliding them into place one after another, moving in a circle around the circumference of the Pentagon-ish defense.
"This is just like something they do on that show, The A-Team,"
Donut had exclaimed when we'd practiced this earlier.
"Or maybe MacGyver. The real MacGyver with the hair and the Stargate. Not that abysmal remake."
"I liked that show," Chris had said as he worked. It was the first and only time I had heard him speak.
"Which one? The A-Team or MacGyver?"
Donut asked.
"Or do you mean the remake? Please tell me you don't mean the remake."
Chris never answered. Once the top was bolted into place, Brandon, Imani, and I moved to the last crucial part. The braces for the roof. 5 heavy-duty barbell poles designed to hold more than 1,000 pounds of weight each. I discovered if I held my hand in just the correct place and called the heavy pole from inventory, it wedged itself perfectly between the roof and ground, solid as a concrete pillar. Our mini-fortress had a usable area of about 10 by 10 feet, and we had to move about on our hands and knees. It was tight when it was just the 6 of us, but with the addition of Agatha, who continued to wail about her damn shopping cart, we could barely move without slamming each other. And because she'd joined us, we didn't have room to place the final center pole. I looked worriedly at that center cross-section of the roof just as Donut exclaimed,
"Here it comes!"
If this boss had any sort of fire or lightning or acid attack, we were absolutely fucked. So far, it seemed each boss only had one main attack, and this one's was pretty obvious. It rolled right the fuck over you. My knee pads had an attribute that canceled out momentum-based attacks, but if my experience with video games was any indication, one couldn't count on that sort of thing when it came to bosses. Plus, there was no way I was going to test it. Once, as a kid, I was riding down a country road with my mom and dad. They'd been fighting, as usual, and I'd climbed into the very back of the SUV, as far back as I could get. I'd oftentimes do this, staring out the rear window as the world whipped by, pretending like I was in the cockpit of a spaceship. On this day, a large, yellow truck was behind us. It was one of those box trucks, a Penske, something people rented to move. It happened so fast. One moment, I was staring up at the guy, who was getting so close to my dad's ass that I had to crane my neck up to see him. And then, the truck was just stopped, pulling away from us, the top peeled off like a sardine can. We'd gone under a bridge, and the truck was too tall. As I watched, the sides of the truck fell away, spilling furniture and boxes all over the road with a resounding crash. The main cab of the truck tilted violently to its side, broken away from the rest of the body. My dad heard the accident, looked up into the rearview mirror, muttered,
"Oh, that's a shame,"
and just kept driving as my mom yelled at him to stop.
He didn't. That's what I was hoping would happen here. This massive ball of flesh filled the hallway, from the ground to the ceiling. My forward section of the redoubt was wider, giving a more gradual angle, just enough to wedge the ball between us and the ceiling nice and tight. Like Mordecai had suggested, I needed to look at the clues. Those strange entrances dotting the side of the arena were there for a reason. It was so we could catch a glimpse of the monster. All I could see was that it was big, round, fast, and shoved tightly into the tunnel. My first idea was to build a solid wall, but as we observed the ball from one of the many portcullis entrances, the track forced the monster directly into a 90-degree angle. It bounced right off, barely losing speed as it turned away. There will always be clues. It never lost momentum. It just kept going and going. So we needed to stop it somehow, and we needed to be in a position to do something about it once it did. I was hoping it'd hit our structure and get wedged in good. From there, Imani would stab, Donut would shoot missiles, Chris would cast his spells, and the rest of us would jab our makeshift ninja star-tipped spears up into the boss until its health ran out. Most of the goblin tables were made of thick, hefty steel, which was why they were so damn heavy. The wide table we used for the front of the redoubt also had a pitted wooden covering. Brandon, Chris, and I had spent a good 5 minutes throwing 50 of my ninja shuriken deep into the wood, adding black spikes to the ramp. Spikes that would hopefully damage the boss each time they pierced its flesh. Unfortunately, only about 20 of the stars remained unbroken. That part had been Brandon's idea. I'd shown him the shuriken and allowed him to read the description.
"These things are way more powerful than you realize,"
he'd said, voice filled with awe.
"Do the math! Compounding damage means if you poke something 200 times, it's like literally millions of points of damage."
"I don't do math. But I do know we ain't poking anything 200 times with these things. Look, I pulled a single star out. I'd tested it earlier to see if I had any sort of ninja skill. It had received a single chip, and the red enchantment had faded away. Mordecai wasn't kidding when he said these things were fragile. They were clearly meant to only be used once, tempering their value. Despite their fragility, we'd used several of the stars to create the spike strips, nothing more than a pair of stars placed between two pieces of bolted-together wood. They'd survive one or two stabbings before breaking. The strips wouldn't be stopping the monster by themselves, but each time it rolled over one, the amount of damage inflicted on the boss would increase by 8%.
"Brace!"
I cried, grasping onto the wall as the monster barreled toward us, impossibly fast.
Crash!
The entire structure shuddered and slid with a horrifying screech. All four of the ceiling braces popped out of place and went flying,